Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Clerks Minute, the show where we look back at the 2006 Kevin Smith sequel, Clerks 2-2. I'm taking it back, minutes at a time. I'm Blake.
I'm Kyle.
From Bare Naked ABCs and Controller Throwers at twitch.tv/controllerthrowers.
Yeah, so welcome to the show, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
No problem. We had Tracy on, who was our first guest of the season. Actually.
Oh, nice.
So very back at episode number 2 of this run. And so here you are on here. And in between all this, I was on your show. So it's been an awesome like back and forth with our shows. So
by the way, I just caught the frame that we were frozen on. It seriously looks like one of those ads for anti-constipation medicine.
We have the screen. For those who wonder, we watch the minutes right before, just remind ourselves right before we go on to record. And we have a pause at like 56:01 and it's Dante in mid-sentence and it looks really bad.
It seriously looks like it should be followed by the words, "Where will you be when your diarrhea medication runs out?"
So, but that's not what we're talking about in this moment. We're going to go back to the beginning of these 2 minutes, and we're going to continue where we left off with Randall and the phrase porch monkey. Now, in the previous episode, we had our boss on, and we talked about our thoughts. Aaron, did you ever hear the phrase porch monkey before this movie?
Wow. I'm pretty sure I was aware of it as a racial slur. I knew it was something that wasn't really said. I don't think I'd heard it as many times in my life as the first time I sat down to watch Clerks 2. I probably heard it more times in that one viewing than I had heard it in my entire life. But yeah, I think I was aware of it. You know, I knew what it was.
Well, okay. It's one of those things where we talked about it in the last episode, but I know I never heard of it before this.
You are a more innocent and pure being than I am.
I know a lot of racist terms, but this is not one of them I've ever heard before. You know, the funny part was there was an episode of Boy Meets World where they actually ran down a whole bunch of like racial epithets to make a point. Yeah. It's not a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's where I heard a lot of the racial epithets for the first time with actually on Boy Meets World.
Okay, here's a real question. How many of the lists that Randall ran down do you know?
Most of them before this movie. Yeah. Most of them before that. Yeah. That's something for the previous episode before this. But for this one, this whole thing starts with my grandmother was kind of a racist.
You think? Kind of.
Which, okay, I'll put this up there. My grandfather, God rest his soul, loved him. He passed away almost 12 years ago. Okay, no, 13 years ago now. He passed away, but I love him to death, but he had a hint of racism. It might have just been the generation.
I think that may have been it.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of, I think, that scene. The whole idea is that our attitude towards race has shifted dramatically in just a couple of generations.
Because he actually always, to the day he died, black people were referred to as colored people. To the day he died. So
that's how it was.
That was the thing.
That's how it was with my grandfather, but he was as far from racist as you could possibly.
Oh, yeah, my point, though, I think it's just the way they grew up.
Yeah.
It wasn't looked at as weird.
Yeah.
That time frame. I mean, he's a World War II veteran, so there's nothing racist, in my opinion, about him. How about you, Aaron? Do you have grandparents just like that and that kind of mentality?
Yeah. When you asked me if I'd heard that before, I didn't want to be like, yeah, my grandfather said that. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I did hear him say that. And that's where I heard it from. The thing is, you know, I don't want to say stuff like that because my grandfather was a great man and he was a very kind-hearted man. You know, I'm sure that there was no hatred in his heart. But at the same time, that's like you say, they were kind of steeped in that language. I'm sure, you know, especially the military in the 1930s and 40s and stuff, you know, that's... It was a very, very different time. I mean, you know, they didn't have really black soldiers. They had like truck drivers and stuff like that, you know, so there was a segregated military. So it's kind of incredible. And, you know, that's another, I mean, not to get too serious on a show about a comedy film, but it kind of blows my mind to think that, you know, my parents or certainly my grandparents were living in a time where they had like separate facilities and restrooms and stuff like that for African-Americans. So, incredible that we've come so far. We still have a way to go, obviously, but it's pretty great that we have come so far in that time.
It's true. That's a very valid point, actually. It's a very, very valid point. Well, getting back to the silliness of this movie, Randall doesn't think Porch Monkey should be considered a racial slur. I love the next thing part is, of this, though. I love the next part, though.
Objectively?
Good.
Yeah. Go ahead. If you were to strip away the racist connotations, it is a funny phrase and a silly phrase, and it does sound like something you would call a little kid, right?
Exactly!
And quite honest, it sounds like it would make a great band name. Like Randall Graves and the Porch Monkeys.
I think we have our title. We have our title of this episode. Thank you.
Oh my god.
Write that down. Well, but I also the fact that he said I always use it to describe lazy people, not lazy black people. Meaning he uses this phrase a lot more than he's willing to admit. Which is sad, in my personal opinion. So, he says, if he really tried, him and Dan Dante had nothing to do with this, they can take Porch Monkey back and save it.
And take it back like it was ever.
A running gag for the rest of the movie.
I do remember losing it. I saw this in the theater with Tracy, I'm pretty sure. And I like lost it when I saw his like taped up shirt where he put Porch Monkey for Life on the back.
Just, like, it's what? So ridiculous.
I believe that shirt actually did get auctioned off.
Did it really?
Yeah.
You know what? That wouldn't surprise me knowing the stash.
Yeah.
That would not surprise me whatsoever. Yeah. No, that's funny, though. That is very funny. But it just, he says it so nonchalantly, like it's normal. And you can take back racist phrases.
Yes.
You know, like it's the normal
take it back. But taking it back implies it was ever something other than a racist phrase, which I'm pretty sure it wasn't.
I don't know. But Dante, to his credit, has a valid point. It can't be saved because the whole purpose is to disparage an entire race. Even if it could be saved, you can't save it because you're not black. What the hell?
Yeah. As only Dante can.
Exactly. And I see Dante's point. I do see his point. The whole thing about like the N-word and all the kind of stuff that only black people can really get away with saying it because it's a black person word.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the same mentality. So, Randall, in his typical fashion, turns it back around on Dante. Typical. Listen to you telling me what I can do when I can't do something because of the color of my skin. You're the racist. How did he turn around on Dante?
The irony is, this was, I mean, okay, so further. I think it's important to establish, we talked about our grandfathers, but also Kevin Smith. I really do not, that guy's got such a big heart. I do not think he has a hateful or racist bone in his body.
No.
I don't think, I wish that didn't have to be said, but I feel like in today's times, we have to kind of throw it out there. I don't think he's anything but a huge-hearted guy. But,
true. Almost literally.
It's funny because this was clearly done as satire.
Oh,
this was clearly done as like showing how ridiculous this argument is that Randall's making, right? But we see this on Facebook every day now, unironically. Like, oh, you're the racist telling me I can't talk about something because I'm not black or whatever. Like, people say this, and I'm sure a lot of them, hopefully, are our trolls. But, like, I'm sure some of them genuinely believe that, and that's kind of weird to think about.
You know what's funny? We've been making a joke on this show, and it's been since the beginning. There's another thing, that there's no way in hell that this would be in a movie now. There's no way this would be allowed in a movie now because of that exact reason.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's no
like,
way.
Blazing Saddles in this stage. You couldn't do it.
No, and like, it seemed like this would never be able to get away with it. There would be so much questioning of everybody.
I was going to say, no, you can't really get away with a lot of stuff now. We can't do a lot of classic comedy now. Now the best you get is an Amy Schumer movie.
I mean, when was Tropic Thunder?
2008.
Because Robert Downey Jr. in blackface. I mean, that's 10 years ago.
Wow. That's been 10 years ago.
I'm surprised he got away with that. 10 years ago,
I think it's probably because of the character.
Yeah,
you know what? I'll tell a story. Speaking of blackface, and I'll tell a story. It's a weird start. No, sorry, but whatever. I was in college here, actually. I was in Jersey. When I was in Jersey, I was in college, and I was actually stage director of a play, assistant stage director of a play, and we had a character because it was an old like I think it was called Lend Me a Tenor, which is an old play.
Yeah.
And one of the characters, the whole gag, mm-hmm. is the fact that he's taking over for the tenor, but he's in blackface. That's the whole gag of the show. There's no way they would have been allowed to do that wow. now. In a college play, there's no way they're allowed to do that anymore. It's just so, it's getting to the point where you can't do stuff like that.
Yeah, you'd have the might of the PC police down on you, like.
So.
Well, I mean, I think we can all agree that, like, there's a certain level of that that's probably good that's not being done anymore. But I would also say, when I see things like people trying to alter the text of, like, Huck Finn or something.
Yeah.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
To me, the whole point of that novel was racism is bad. And it was illustrating how poorly a lot of people treated African Americans in that time in the country. And it was, you know, Huck Finn coming to the realization that, hey, I shouldn't be like those people. Jim is a good friend. This is reflective of an era in our time. And that's the way people talk. That's the way they think. We can't to whitewash that, gloss it over. It takes away the value of the entire book. You know, it takes away the message of the book. And if it's saying, like, and it's like, if we were to make it like, oh, it wasn't so bad back then aren't we doomed to repeat the past? Like, shouldn't we point, as we should hold ourselves accountable, especially more so to being truthful when we're at our worst. So I feel like it's important to retain that kind of stuff.
I agree with you because I'm a big musical person, a huge musical person. And obviously my conversations I have on this show throughout the time. But you can't do a musical like 1776 or Hamilton without bringing up the slavery that happened in the 1770s, 1776 and on. You can't not bring that up. You know, it's an important Hamilton's part of our history. Example. And you can't rewrite history. You have to address it. So that's exactly the same mentality. You can't basically, rewrite history.
Basically, if you try and rewrite it, it becomes Song of the South.
A movie that we've never
look,
seen
look
again.
Look how that turned out.
Exactly. You thought I'd never be seen. I want to know, how many people under the age of like 25 have a clue where the Zipperier comes from?
I have no idea.
I would love to know. Like, I don't think anyone knows where it comes from anymore.
Actually, by extension, how many people have a clue where Splash Mountain came from?
Touche.
Right.
And yeah, what I was going to say about Huck Finn there. Shh, don't tell these protesters that. That means they have to think. Think they don't have two brain cells to rub together.
All right, speaking of rubbing brain cells together, back to the movie. Dante walks away just like in a classic Dante huff.
That's where it is.
He knows how to exit a room. He really does. And Randall jumps off the counter and just yells, "I'm taking it back. You watch." Oh, great. Here we go. Now, before we get to the next part, during all this, Elias.
Yeah.
Poor Elias.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Cleaning up a mess. And I just want to know, why the hell is that? Was that the headset from the drive-thru, or is that just random headphones? That is ridiculously big headphones that he's wearing.
I think it might be the drive-thru headset.
Because it's so ridiculous. Because he's mopping it up. He's got a big plastic bag. He's trying to clean up this mess. I'm like, what is going on back here? Okay, then. We're not this serious conversation about racism, and also Elias is just standing there mopping up a mess.
What was it? He always was over of a mood whiplash thing? Like, you can have any conversation, and he'd be the one to derail it just by being there?
True. And Elias is there for that a lot of times.
You can have a serious conversation about the genocide in Rwanda. Cut to Elias.
Pretty much. That's how the movie's been. I feel like the movie's been.
I want to ask something here, and I there's no way that this cannot sound disrespectful, and mean it that way, but because I think there's some really great finesse, and I apologize to the actor who played him. I don't recall the name off the top of my head, but he was great in that role.
Well, wait, which one?
Elias. Trevor Fairman.
He did a great job, but I wonder, just as the what you were just saying there with the mood shift and the comedy and all, I wonder, is Elias the Jar Jar Binks of Clerks 2?
I would not go that far.
No, Elias is actually somewhat likable.
I wouldn't take him out of the movie.
You know what? You're absolutely right. I take it back 100% because if I could, I would remove Jar Jar. I would not remove
Lance. Yeah, unfortunately,
but I meant more, not in the ruining the film sense, but just in his role.
I know what you're saying, though. I know what you mean. I know what you meant.
That's why I get with the fans and say, oh, The Last Jedi was the worst Star Wars movie ever. They should have gotten...
Go ahead and watch Phantom Menace again.
No. I wouldn't even say Phantom Menace is the worst. Attack of the Clones is the worst Star Wars movie ever made. I do not like... I'll put the fucking Clone Wars animated movie above Attack of the Clones.
But yeah,
and that's not even a very good movie
to begin with. But yeah, what I was trying to say is all these people are saying, well, The Last Jedi is the worst movie ever made. It's, you know, pushing a agenda that... Yeah, you guys forgot about the prequels, didn't you? You know, the same ones that you were bitching about before the new trilogy came about. And now you want George Lucas back? You're the most unpleasable lot of fuckers I've ever met.
It's our fetish for hyperbole and for superlatives. Well, nothing can be kind of okay. Nothing can be, it could have been better. Everything's got to be either the best thing ever or the worst thing ever.
What I was going to say
nobody knows new...
But I'll jump in on here because Screen Junkies released their honest trailer for Solo the week we're recording this.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be way out of time when people are hearing this, but whatever. They said straight up on the honest trailer commentary tracks, they had three people on their panel. And I'd never seen this happen before on a Screen Junkies show, that one of them loved the movie, one of them was indifferent, and one of them hated it. And guess what? They got along and had an actual conversation. I'm like, that's how you do it! That's how you do it!
Now, why can't Star Wars fans do that? Oh, right.
I'm like, this is how you do a conversation.
It's no longer a film series. It's a religion.
Yeah, it's scary. Oh, we talked about Star Wars in another episode already. Oh, so.
And you have all these people whining about, you know, how they have strong female characters and all that. They're like toddlers that are, you know, just want to take their toy and leave.
Yeah.
So meanwhile.
Yeah. No. Honestly.
Meanwhile.
Yeah. Let's get out of that.
Speaking of a toddler brain, we have Randall. Jump to the register. We hear the door open, and a mother and son come to the register. And his first sentence was, "Hey, what can I get you, you little porch monkey?" Looks at his mom. It's cool. I'm taking it back. And here we go. We're starting
the perfect stinger for that scene.
It really was a perfect stinger. It really the perfect way to end that whole weird scene of the poor monkey conversation. All right, so to get out of this.
I just wanted to say something about Randall's character because he's my favorite character in both of the Clerks films. And that really encapsulates his character where Dante or someone else will call him on his bullshit. But he will just double down and just not care.
It's so true. It's a true statement.
And, you know, he just goes for endearing, I think, in a certain way.
It's true. He is set in what he wants to do, and he'll do it no matter what anyone says.
He's a man of conviction. As weird as those convictions may be.
Exactly. He does have conviction, and he's not easily swayed. That is the truth. So... we end this weird scene, and we cut to any time. I think what I love about this movie, especially at this point in the movie, when weirdness happens, just cut to Rosario Dawson, and all is good.
Yeah.
All is good. We cut to Becky
like
in her office.
Dramatic gravitas.
Yes, we cut to Becky in her office, looking at the invitation from earlier, and then he's looking at this really cool frame on the desk, which, if it's not the caption photo for this episode, it will be on our Facebook somewhere, because I love this photo. So... It's a frame of her and the guys. It pretty much it's Becky on Dante's back, jumped on his back, which is adorable. And then you have Randall just not wanting to be in this picture, and Elias messing with him with bunny ears behind him.
Yeah.
If that's not the definition of their relationship, I don't know what is.
This actually brings to mind a great little encapsulation. This brings to mind, who took the picture?
I was going to say self-timer. I was going to say self-timer, personally. I was looking at this thing, thinking, like, hold on, maybe they had Jay or Bob do it.
Tyler Bob did it.
Exactly, Jay or Bob. They're out there all the time.
Can't be Jay.
They wouldn't trust Jay with the camera, but they would probably trust Bob.
Yeah, I would trust Bob. I would trust Bob with the camera.
I would totally trust Bob.
No,
he's like a Zen master.
Well, Jay would be too frantic. He wouldn't be able to hold the camera still. He'd be way too frantic.
Or he'd just take the picture and then run off with the camera.
Well, true. So, I love the picture. I love this picture so much because it's a good definition of the four of them and showing how long they've actually been working together. I like this. Yeah. And it shows their relationships really, really, really well up to this point. So we come back outside and I got into movies itself. It's oddly quiet for lunchtime. I want to make a note of that. It's oddly quiet.
They've probably heard about the porch monkey incident.
Probably. Because there's... Yeah. Apparently Dante has the time to sit at the table and do a crossword puzzle, apparently. Yeah. What he's doing, or is it a new puzzle or something? Yeah. This sort of looks like what he's doing. And Becky sits down. And I love this conversation, because this is a trope from, like, sitcoms. But I love this conversation, because she goes and says, so are you scared about getting married and all? And his response,
yeah.
We're in the middle of a conversation. I don't remember leaving.
Yeah.
That's a sitcom trope. I love it.
It's a lampshade, yeah.
Oh, man. I love that, because it's almost like a married couple conversation. Yeah. Like, wait, were we talking about something and I missed it? Like, what happened here? Yeah. So... This starts up him. This is the oddest question. I do give Beck some oddest points here. This is definitely a good question to ask, especially the day before he's going to leave for Florida.
Yeah.
At this point.
Now or never, right? So.
And Becky goes and says, "I was just thinking that you were just waiting for some friend to see if you want to go through with the wedding, but asking if you're even ready to get married." I love how straightforward she is. She's so straightforward. Like. Fuck it. I'm just going to be straight up and straightforward with you and not give a shit because I just feel like being honest with you. Because I'm your friend and that's what I do.
Really need that. You know, I think in his own way, Randall offers that, but it's so covered in his Randallisms and him, you know, his kind of like mildly antagonistic occasionally attitude that I think he doesn't get through to Dante in the same way that Becky does. And he really needs that in his life.
You need the female voice.
Yeah.
More than anything else. I've had a lot of female voice.
Yeah. Both of them, you know, all the men in the film really need her. She's the den mother, whether she wants to be or not.
Yeah. And one would think, it almost feels like she fights it, but she loves it at the same time.
Yeah, they're a family, you know, honestly.
It's true. And
they're a weird dysfunctional family.
Well, Elias, he honestly needs a den mother. I mean, we see what happened when we left him unsupervised.
Yeah.
True. Yeah. True. Very, very true. So, and this, I would like to make a note to people that we will be getting into the second half of this conversation in our next episode, which is by far one of my favorite scenes of this entire movie, which is coming up in the next couple of shows. But we'll get to that. But he'll say, I'm not scared about getting married. You know, I always wanted to get married one day. Because that's something you... Okay, so this is judging what we're talking about throughout this movie. And how much does he really want... Does he really love... help me. How did name
oh, Emma.
Emma. Does he really love Emma? Or is it kind of one of those things where he's getting married for the hell of it?
That's the thing. This scene is the emotional keystone of the film.
True.
It's the turning point. And the theme of, if you'll permit me to be so bold, I think the theme of Clerks 2, as well as Clerks, and in fact, Dante's entire struggle as a character throughout both films, the theme is like totally head on with Clerks because he works in a literal convenience store. His girlfriend is urging Dante's afraid to take risks. He's afraid of failure. It's more convenient for him to stay where he is and blame his lot in life on the store and on Randall, rather than take responsibility for his own life. Randall even calls him out on that. And one comes up again where he's with Emma and he recognizes she's a catch, that he's fortunate to have someone like her love him, but he doesn't really love her, or he's not sure that he does. He doesn't feel that emotional connection. So while what he really wants is that true love that we're all after on Emma and rejecting her, he will not have any available to him that are anywhere near as appealing. Of course, but he doesn't really realize that he's got something already with Becky.
That's true. That's a very good point. Kyle, any thoughts on that?
No, he's right.
Absolutely. I agree with you. 100%. I was talking about this, I think, when the invitation scene happened. And I went and said, at this point, I'm just like, one of those things where you said it's convenient for him. It's convenient for him to get married and get out of Jersey and go to Florida. But is it the right thing for him to do? I don't think so. I think he's finally realizing that.
Not to mention the fact that Emma is clearly the wrong choice, because she just wants to have somebody to control and...
and change.
Yeah.
As we've been talking about earlier in the movie. Yeah. It's so true. And, yeah, that's...
Well, we all know Emma ends up with Silent Bob anyway.
In real life, yeah. In real life. So, that's where we end our 2 minutes, and that's where we have this. I know you mentioned earlier that you saw Clerks 2 in the movie theaters, which is actually pretty cool, because it's a lot of people didn't see Clerks in the movie theater. Clerks 2, you did. What's your history of the ViewAskew universe, not including this movie?
Oh, God, okay. So, back in... Clerks came out in, what, 96, 97, something like that?
Clerks is 1994.
94, wow. Okay, I probably saw it in 96. It was probably on a VHS at that point. Probably watched it on a VCR. It was one of those movies that everyone was talking about. So I would have been like 13 years old, so not even in high school yet. But, you know, you got your friends who have, like, they're like, hey, man, you hear about this movie? Like, I got a copy of it on VHS. I heard it's, like, really, like, vulgar and stuff like that. So, you know, you're a little kid. And you're like, oh, I want to watch that. So I remember watching it with my friend Dylan. We like snuck down to his living room when his parents were asleep, and we watched it, trying to not to laugh and wake them up. And you know, from there I was hooked. It was Clerks was such a it was like a visceral gut punch of obscene indie punk rock DIY chutzpah. You know what I mean? It was just such a disruptive film. When it came out, I remember it was so different. The fact that it was black and white, I know that was done out of economic necessity, but it actually made it a kind of more stark and like nihilistic in a way. It really struck an emotional chord with, you know, a very young, like 13-year-old me. And then, of course, Mallrats. I didn't see that in the theater, I don't think, but I did watch it on like DVD or VHS. I didn't see Chasing Amy till like several years like after Dogma. I had to come back to that. I don't know how I missed that on that. I like Chasing Amy. Let's not get into a conversation. That's a whole other rat hole. I think Dogma might be his best film. I love Dogma. I saw, believe it or not, I saw Jersey Girl in the theater.
Wow. You're one of the few.
It's not my favorite of his films, but I do think that it gets more shit than it deserves, probably because of the whole Bennifer thing.
Yeah, I'll give you credit there. Yeah, true.
George Carlin did a really great dramatic turn in that film, actually, which alone is worth the price of admission.
True.
But I haven't seen a lot of his newer stuff. I wonder if that's the last one I saw. What did he do after that? I haven't seen Tusk. I haven't seen
Yoga Hosers. And then there's also
Jan Sturm, Bob Strike Back. That was great.
Zack and Miri
make a porno, but that wasn't his movie. He directed it, but he didn't write that one. So that's a different thing.
Yeah, I did see that.
He wrote Zack and Miri? Cop Out. He didn't write Cop Out.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
Didn't see Cop Out.
But
I've heard mixed reviews.
It's what it is. It's the Bruce Willis. It actually, you know what? His experience on that movie gave him that Bruce Willis comic with Bruce Willis material for all his comedy specials. So that also is a good thing. That's a good thing.
That is very true. That's very true. I loved hearing him talk about Wild Wild West, though. Superman.
That is
the
funny.
Giant spider.
That is very, very funny.
But yeah, I'll put it this way. I haven't seen everything he's done, but I've seen a lot. And most of what I've seen, I've really liked, and some of it I've loved. And I greatly admire the bulk of his work. And like I said before, I think he's got such a huge heart, and that's very, very evident in every film that he makes. There's always a message. It's not preachy. You know, even Dogma is not preachy. That's kind of the whole point of it. But he has an emotional core to all of his films, which is a lot more than I can say for like your average Michael Bay film or something like that, right? Sure. There's an emotional core. There's an authenticity about it. I think, interestingly enough, Clerks 2, I think I don't like Clerks 2 as much as I like Clerks, and I think that's a popular feeling. And it's unfortunate because Clerks 2 is really the better film from a production standpoint by miles, certainly. I don't think it's given proper credit by a lot of people, you know? I feel like, whereas we had talked about how Clerks was so stripped down and kind of bare bones and punk rock, that's where he was at the time. You know, he was taking a huge chance, right? He paid for everything on his credit cards, maxed them out. It was kind of similar to, I don't know if you guys are Jonathan Coulton fans, but Jonathan Coulton hit a period in his life where he was like, okay, I'm about to be a father. If I don't take a risk on something now, I'm probably never going to have the time or the ability. So he just like quit his job, put out a song a week on his website, happened to take off, and it launched his career. Similar thing happened with Clerks, right? With
yeah, true. It's a very true point.
With Kevin. So, yeah, I think, you know, he was taking a big risk. And with Clerks, too, I mean, he was a father at this point, right?
Yeah, it's because Harley's in the movie. Yeah. Harley's in the movie.
So I think it was emotionally honest from his standpoint where he was at the time that he made it. If he had tried to recreate the past, it would have been self-derivative, creatively bankrupt, and probably emotionally disingenuous. So it seems, you know, it does have some pretty edgy humor with the Porch Monkey scenes and the donkey show. But it seemed the edgy stuff was more the garnish than the main course, as it was in the original Clerks. So whereas Clerks was like a series of raunchy conversations presented in vignettes loosely connected by like an overarching plot involving Dante's seeming inability to shit or get off the pot, Clerks 2 is a more traditionally crafted three-act film based around Dante's executive dysfunction, trimmed with all these raunchy conversations and stuff.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is more of a film than even... And we joked about that when we were doing Clerks.
Yeah.
That it was funny that a lot of times you'd have these like scenes that would literally be in a 1 or 2 minute chunk. It'd be perfect for our format.
Terrible cinema. I love it to death, but it is terrible cinema.
You know what, though? It made it perfect for our format. It didn't make it great for us. So, we're being completely honest. Which is one of the reasons why we did this in 2 minutes, because I knew there was going to be a lot to go on in here, and I love having the conversation with people. And to answer your question, by the way, about the Clerks 2 versus Clerks, I asked that question to everybody. Because for me, this is my favorite Kevin Smith movie. This is my favorite one. And I asked that question. And we've gotten literally mixed reactions. We've had a lot of positive, and a lot of Clerks is better. And we've had people rank their movies. I'm like, it's mixed. And I appreciate the honesty with people, though. I appreciate the honesty. Because it's hard to rank this movie because it is so different.
Yeah, it is. It's a much better film, in my opinion. I really like it. I think it doesn't get half the love that it should. But I just, maybe because of I was 13, it was such an impact on my life. Clerks will always have a special place in my heart. Having said that, what is your favorite film? What is your favorite scene in this film, in Clerks 2?
Ooh. So we're getting up to the dance sequence, which I love.
That is a great one.
I love the dance sequence, and the fact that I actually have my wife, his sister, coming on to talk about the first half of that for me is going to be amazing.
Nice.
Because she refused to come on the first movie, the fact she's coming on to do this scene for me is great. I love the dance sequence, and I love the full Lord of the Rings Star Wars conversation. That's great, but I think the heart of the movie is the jail scene, which is later in the end, because that's such a great scene that you didn't see coming when you first watched it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you think? What about you, Kyle?
It's interesting.
What about you, Kyle? What are your favorite scenes in this movie?
I would have to say, for me, them, spoiler alert, reopening the Quick Stop.
Yeah, that is a great moment. That is a great moment, too.
Because you actually do see Randall also growing up a bit, too.
Yeah, it's true. That is the Randall story. The second half of this movie is really the Randall story. It's cool, though, the fact that both Randall and Dante have a storyline, an actual storyline in this movie. Both of them do.
Well, the other evolution is it's kind of the Dorothy Gale evolution, right? It's kind of the No Place Like Home. You're looking for something special. You think you need to go away somewhere, you know, exotic to find it. And then you come back and say, you know what? I can make a happy life for myself in this. Completeness or happiness or fulfillment comes from within. It's a very Zen sentiment.
That is actually well done, and I think we can't do better than that in this episode. So, real quick, I'm going to actually plug our buddies, because you mentioned Mallrats and the other View Askew movies. I'm going to plug our buddies over at Jay and Silent Bob Minute. They're good guys over there. I was actually on their show at the beginning of Mallrats, and they're covering everything else in the View Askew universe. And they're doing Clerks 2 later. They did Clerks, but they're covering all the other movies that we're not covering over there. So check them out. They're a couple of really good guys. And the only reason they didn't come over here is because they didn't want to do this movie twice, which I understand. I completely get it. But good guys over there.
That makes sense.
So we'll get all our plugs out of the way. I'll start with you, Aaron. Get your plugs in. Go.
Check out Bare Naked ABCs, where me and my friends talk about Bare Naked Ladies songs in alphabetical order. And certainly check out, if you're a fan of video games and humor and people throwing controllers around, my show Controller Throwers at twitch.tv/controllerthrowers. You can find us on Facebook. Search Controller Throwers. Look for the redly distinct 8-bit and that is us. Perfect. So yeah, hope to see you guys in the chat maybe sometime. That'd be great.
That's actually, I think that'd be more up Kyle's alley, actually, because the old school video game stuff, I think it's right up your alley kind of mentality. For me, we'll plug Filling the Void Podcast Network. That is our home. The boss was on the episode before this, so awesome. You can hear us obviously every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also hear me on the Blake and Sal show every single Friday, and me and Mandy covering the movie Rent on No Days But Today every other Friday morning as well. I'm literally doing three projects at the same time, which is absolutely insane. Looking back at this, this was not a smart idea on my part, but whatever. I'm doing it anyway. That all being said, where can I find you on the Twitter?
I'm at GamePadThrow is Controller Thrower's official Twitter. And okay. If you go to controllerthrowers.com, I believe that dumps you into our YouTube channel, which we're still kind of starting up at the moment, but we'd love to have people watch our videos on there.
Awesome. Kyle, where they can find you on the Twitter?
Hudson Hawk FIM.
And I'm at Riley21106, and also the show is at Clerks Minute. Facebook at Clerks Minute. Instagram, a very busy Instagram, because we put the graphics up of all the episodes and everything going on over there. It's actually, I actually post a lot of, like, Kevin Smith photos and stuff in the stash, and I plug like Marilyn Gigliotti's gigs and things like that over there. So good guy, good people over there that we help us out. And Instagram, and I think that's all of our plug. Oh, and the Facebook community, the Clerks Convenient group, join us over there, chit chat, tell us what we said wrong, or to talk about this movie over there. All that being said, thank you so much, Aaron, for coming on the show. This is a lot of fun and really insightful.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me on, guys. I love the film and I love talking about it with you. Hope that we can collaborate with Bare Naked ABCs again sometime down the road. But
I would hope
have
so.
Have a great night.
I would hope so. It's
and,
my favorite band.
Thanks again.
They are my favorite band, so I hope so. So
got to keep interrupting you. It's the old interrupting orange. Thank you guys so much. Have a good night. And take care of my little porch monkeys.
All right. On that note, thank you so much for listening to Clerks Minute. I'm Blake.
I'm Kyle.
Have a good day, everybody.
So what can I get for you, you little porch monkey?
Noinch, 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 smoking weed, doing coke, drinking beers, rolling fatties, smoking blunts, who smokes the blunts, rolling blunts and smoking.